And somebody didn't make show notes?
Yeah, Patrick.
I have show notes in my head. Didn't I already mention this? Hi everyone, welcome to Vassals of Kingsway's Linear Reread. This is the next episode in the series, but this is not actually going to be a reread episode because we're not going to be covering any chapters. We're just going to take a look back at the first two books in the series because we covered the last Clash of Kings chapter in the last episode. Joining me today are Hannah.
Oh, hey, it's Shadow Baby.
Tanya.
Hi, this is Tanya Silence on the forums.
Jock.
Hi, this is Jock.
Patrick.
Greetings, Patrick the Toll on the forums.
And Mary.
Hi, it's Mary, and Nymeria on the forums.
Okay, and this episode is going to be full of spoilers from the Song of Ice and Fire series. So, if you haven't read the books, you shouldn't be here at all.
Go away, filthy casual.
Patrick hates you.
It also okay, may contain spoilers for the French elections.
Yeah.
And Brexit. And
Tanya's relationship.
Don't tell my boyfriend, he doesn't know yet.
Yeah.
Okay, so what have you guys thought of our linear reread, because it's definitely different from the order in which the chapters are in the books. Do any of you think that it has made a difference in the reread, in how we read the book?
I think it does.
There's a few things.
It does put things in perspective in some ways, and there were some of the time frames that I just really wasn't clear about because I didn't think about this at all when I first read the books. So that's quite interesting to see how some of those things are spaced temporally and how they relate to each other. But overall, I don't know. I mean, I think it'll have more of an effect later on. But overall, I feel like it hasn't had a massive effect. As in, I
agree with you. It's like as we get toward the end of Clash, and now we're starting Storm of Swords, and everyone's so far spread out, I think it makes more of a difference.
Yeah.
To see, okay, this happened and everything, but like for Game of Thrones, I don't think so.
Yeah, for Game of Thrones, the order wasn't that different anyway. Patrick, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I guess there's a few storylines that I think gets affected by it, and therefore it kind of changes my opinion. I mean, especially Clash of Kings, we have the whole situation between, you know, Catelyn moving down and talking to the Baratheons and whatever, and the whole battle report between what Rob is doing and what Catelyn's doing and what how much they know and stuff like that. I like that. That it feels like I've actually, I don't know, understood why things are as fucked up as they are, essentially. Better. There's also the thing with when Tyrion he prepares for the everything in like the siege of King's Landing. I also think that it puts a lot more weight on what happened. What's happening there when it's in the right order with everything Catelyn does and the movement of Stannis. So I there's a few things I enjoy, but especially especially in Clash of Kings that it's apparent.
It actually made one thing stand out to me was how isolated Dany's storyline is from the rest of the books.
Yeah,
especially. Even though in Game of Thrones you don't really notice a difference in the order of the chapters, except when it comes to Dany's chapter, they're all kind of like clumped together in one place chronologically. But in the book they're kind of like sprinkled throughout the book, right? Because they're not really related to the events that are happening over the mysteries. So you can just like put them in anywhere. But when you look at her story, when you separate it away from the others, it's kind of like happening in a completely different timeline as, you know, compared to what it is in the books.
Yeah, I completely agree, Nadia. That's what I thought too about the Danny timeline, and it's for her that it's mostly it's the most striking impact. I also think the linear reread just puts things in perspective as to when are all of the big things happening, so that you can actually see that the timeline is really a lot of things are happening at the same time, and then there's nothing for a while, and it's interesting to actually pay attention to when all of this is happening. I'm having a hard time figuring out if it really changes a lot of things for me, because just for the fact that we're not reading it at the same speed that we would actually read the book. I just have the feeling that I'm reading a few chapters every few weeks for the rereads, but maybe doing this actual linear reread all at once, or just like you would, like the way you would read a book normally, we would maybe feel the difference more.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have to ask Emily, don't you reread the chapters several times a week? I do.
Every day,
every minute.
Do you mean in preparation for the podcast?
No, just because it's just like some people read the Bible, I read this, okay? So step off this one, religion, okay?
So you're saying this is like the Bible?
Go ahead, Nadia.
Yeah, I was just saying there was another thing that we noticed when we were doing, as we were doing the reread. In every episode, we would notice that, like, you know, in three or four chapters that, you know, are kind of like next to each other, there's a certain theme that's going on in those chapters. But when you look at it in the books, when they're in a different order, it's not that noticeable. The thing that I remember most clearly is when I think there were like three chapters. One was, I think, Tyrion, and one was Dany, and one was something else. And they were all like talking about how maybe there was something magical happening, that maybe the dragons had come back or something like that. And it was happening in like three different chapters, which were happening at pretty much the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not something you notice when you're reading the book.
Like, right, it's like right at the beginning, well, for us in our linear reread, the beginnings of Clash of Kings, because we had like seven where they're all talking about the comet and the dragons, and then they just like stop. And I was just thinking about this the other day. I was like, yeah, you know, that whole comet thing kind of fizzled out, but I remembered it being like a thing through the whole book. And then I thought, oh yeah, it's the way we're reading it right now.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I wonder, do we know anything? Has Martin said anything about how he tends to write the chapters? Do we know if he wrote them maybe closer to the order we're reading them now, or what's going on?
Yeah,
he doesn't. He presumably doesn't write them in the order they're in the books necessarily.
No, definitely not. He did talk about him writing characters through periods of their like whole storylines, and then sometimes going back and changing stuff. And if he feels that something is relevant for another character, he might also elaborate on that. So it's kind of, yeah, it is if obvious from when you read it in a linear reread that it's essentially it's not a coincidence that some things are connected in that sense, because that might be a thing that he's actually been thinking about.
But then maybe that is a bit surprising, though, if he doesn't write chapter that happened at a similar time.
Yeah, well, sometimes. I mean, it depends. He just says that whatever comes natural, but usually he tends to like write whatever he can on one character as much
Sure.
as he as possible, so that he doesn't lose his thread. But I definitely think that he also looks at the other characters when he then if they experience something similar, or maybe if they're at the same place at the same time. I do think that he references the other characters. I mean, that would be a wise choice at least. But he definitely said that he tends to focus on a character at a time.
Okay.
I think it gets really interesting when you have like the Sansa Tyrion chapters because they're in the same place. And like on my first read through, it was a little frustrating for me, towards the end of Clash when you get into like the Battle of Blackwater, because we are skipping around, but you could tell by reading it, okay, well, shouldn't that have been like one Sansa chapter and then another Sansa chapter right away? And in our reread now, you get that. But it's really interesting to see with two characters that are in close proximity how their chapters come down when it's in the linear order. And I think, like, especially when we get into Feast Dance, it'll start getting really crazy with so many characters will be together, you
Yeah,
know?
that's really
Yeah, it's gonna
interesting.
be weird.
Yeah. It'll be hard having to carry around two books instead of one everywhere I go.
I think that'll start with Storm of Swords because you're suddenly getting like Cersei and Jaime in the mix too, and then Brienne comes in,
Right.
and then yeah, so we'll probably start seeing more of,
Yeah,
jumping around.
we should definitely do like a Bible recitation style podcast where
Every
like
night.
everybody should turn to the Book of Daenerys verse 5 chapter 3, yeah, like that line whatever,
Oh,
and
God.
it was set on the day,
Oh, dear.
where are my dragons? And everybody face palmed.
That can be your next project.
Oh, my
What's up,
God.
everyone?
I totally want that.
Yeah, I do.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hello.
Hey.
Matt,
Matt, do you
yes.
have any opinions about how this linear reread has affected how you read the books? How the storylines work together when they're in a different order? Especially Dany's, because it's like kind of a standalone story.
Yeah, I don't know how he came up with the order because I mean I think sometimes it's almost
Reddit
deliberate
came
that
up with
like
the order.
it's, what's that?
Reddit came up with the order. Oh, like what? What do you mean? Do you mean the order the
No,
chapters are
I don't
happening?
like how George came up with the order because
Oh.
it seems
Oh
like
yeah, that's a good
deliberate,
question.
like like when you think Bran's dead and then all of a sudden like Bran is the last chapter, that's just for suspense, but it seems like there are a couple parts that I've noticed in this linear reread that chapters that are basically back to back are way far apart, like in the actual reading order. Also, this reread's been going on for so long. I was listening to like I think Radio Westeros or something, and I was like, I should really reread these books again. I was like, wait a minute, I already am, but we're doing the linear reread. It's just taking. So, yeah,
Well,
I mean, I like it. It's fun.
you could do both, you know. You can reread it on your own and linearly, right?
Yeah, but then my brain will melt and
Yeah, I feel
come
like
out
that
of my
takes away
ears and
from the whole point of reading them in a specific order, right? Because then, yeah.
But you
Well.
guys are so slow.
Perhaps
It's so annoying.
you just do a linear reread one day of the entire series, and then you.
Yeah, I
Problem
mean,
is,
I have to.
have to be slow because otherwise we'll be done with the reread and Winds of Winter still won't be out and
Then
then
we
we'll have to
can
do another reread
do,
and then
yeah.
it'll never end.
Nadia, don't say
Well, then we do the
that.
original
It'll be
order
out
again and
this year.
compare how it's different. Another thing is
Maybe George is waiting for us.
that's possible. So let's hurry up.
Yeah, what
Dumb,
if that's
dumb.
the case?
To me, I also find I find it more immersive to read it that way. So I've always been a bit weird about reading books. So like for me, the real time Lord of the Rings we were doing was the best thing ever, because I always hated reading stories that happen over a large time frame in a very short period of time. And I'd sometimes read multiple books in parallel, so I'd spread them out to get a sense of time passing. And I also feel like reading them in linear order makes it a bit more real and more tangible. So to me, it feels more immersive to read the books this way, and I'm enjoying it more. I don't think it would be good for a first read, but overall, I think as a reread, I'm enjoying this a lot more because it feels much more immersive to me.
I will tell you something I do enjoy.
I agree,
though.
In the sense that I like knowing where everyone is at a certain moment.
Yeah.
Like the control freak in me, where everyone is, what everyone is doing. I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I will.
Yeah, I will tell you something I do enjoy. I mean, I think that we can have a larger appreciation of what John is doing, because now everything is like so much better, right?
I think you have to spell out JON when Tanya's on the call.
No, I think Patrick is saying that just to upset Tanya. So he might even say
Patrick
John.
Would never do that. Wait, what?
No, I would never try to upset Tanya.
Of course.
I would do it without even thinking about it, usually.
Sure.
So one thing that I'm picking up with the linear reread as well is the dropping of hints that George does becomes much more apparent. When you get subsequent chapters and you hear something in the background about something stupid, like a ship, like the Cinnamon Wind or something like that, it was said to be there, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, that's the same ship as two chapters ago, because you read it two chapters ago and not half a book ago.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, but again, that raises the question of how does he write the chapters, for one thing, and how does he decide on the order? Because I think that for a few of the things we've been noticing, when we see a theme, you were saying, in one specific linear reread episode, and we see something similar between the chapters, I think maybe sometimes we're reading it, we're reading much more into it than there actually is, because it seems to be, it seems to me that it could be a coincidence. And obviously for other things like the comet, it's clearly on purpose, obviously, that they all talk of the comet at the same time. But how does it choose that order and not something else? It's not always clear.
I think you're right about the themes. I think sometimes we find themes that aren't necessarily there. But if you try really hard, you can come up with ways to connect chapters. But then obviously
that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
We squint our eyes and kind of tilt our head and come up with new ideas.
Hmm.
We never
That shade of blue, that must mean something, right?
That reminds me when back in school we read a book and we had to go through the entire book and write down every instance where the author says that there's cracks in the wall, and then we had to analyze what all mentions of cracks in the wall in the entire book mean.
What book was it?
Is it called, maybe it's called
the
Chess
book,
Novella
crack in, the wall.
In English, I don't know. Schachnovelle by Stefan Zweig. German book, German school. It's really good, everyone should read it, but you shouldn't go through it and analyze every single crack in the wall, because
Does that beget crackpot theories?
I think that's where they come from. But I think that's kind of what we're doing sometimes. And I complained a lot about that when I was in school.
With some things, though, I feel like the linear reread's actually detracting. Like, going back to the Red Comet thing, I kept remembering it as being, like, a much bigger deal when I read it the first time. And then when we did the linear reread, I was like, well, that was over really quickly.
Yeah, it's actually quite brief.
It took me to remember a minute to remember, like, oh no, it's just because we're doing all this shit out of order. Because I was like, didn't that last for the whole book? And it was like a big thing forever. But then I realized, like, oh no, and it makes sense because it shouldn't have been there over like months and months and months, right?
Mm.
Like even when we get what is it, Halley's Comet, or like when the Hale-Bopp Comet was around, that only was for 10 days or so.
Oh yeah, we talked about that, didn't we, on that episode?
yeah
it
so
wasn't visible.
It makes sense, but kind of it detracted from well, I guess not detracted, but I just remember it as being more important the first time, and I was kind of focusing on it and looking for deeper meaning. And then with this, it was so brisk that I was able to focus on other things and my attention was pulled elsewhere.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'd have to say that there's clearly a reason the chapters are in the order they're in. I mean, I don't know if every single ordering necessarily is that important, but overall, like Martin clearly put thought into how he ordered the chapters. And I think overall it probably works much better than reading them linearly, but I don't know, it's just very different ways of reading it. But I think obviously we lose some things that were intentionally put there.
I think its original order like enhances the suspension, character tensions, obviously, just because you don't get something resolved immediately. Sometimes it takes, you know, sometimes you have to go to like three different places before you come back and get, you know, an issue resolved, or
yeah, and some things that really matter a lot and kind of draw out over several chapters just happen really quickly because they just don't take much time. So
yeah,
he is a suspense writer.
Which
is why you wouldn't want to do this. You wouldn't want to read this way the first time around, right? This is purely for TV. Yeah.
No, you want to read it as canon, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a fantastic way of reading it, but I wouldn't recommend it to anyone the first time. So.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But as a social experiment, maybe we should do it. Like, experiment on one of our friends and make them read it in that way. I mean, like the guy that taught his son, you know, Klingon, yeah.
Well, it's an interesting point, Patrick. I mean, you were teasing Mary earlier, but you know, about not reading it like all the way through and just taking it like a chunk at a time for each episode. I have wondered like what would happen if I took a Game of Thrones and Clash and read them in this order all at once, and would that be different? Because right now I am just taking it our episodes at a time, whatever is covered, and it's great for analysis and to be able to discuss them, but it's not fluid either like the published order is, or if you just sat and read it.
Yeah, it's not good for immersion, I think, to read it so slowly. So
for me, it really is, but I feel differently about this because I'm weird. So I feel more immersed if I take more
time.
Reading
that, I went back and I read a Game of Thrones like before I started podcasting with you guys, but I just read Dany like through it, and I had intended to like just read each character all the way through, but then I started.
We can
doing
do that.
This
we can
guys.
Do that. I mean, we've got like 25,000 years before the next book comes out, so that can be our next project when we finish.
Don't say that.
Sorry.
Well, yeah. I mean, really.
Some people say it's not going to come out. So.
Yeah.
No, I think Winds will be out. Like, I still am holding out for this year, but definitely between Winds and A Dream of Spring, we'll have lots of time.
Yeah. So then we can do the reread.
Well, so far as like first timers doing it linearly, like I don't think that's that's great. Like, I get, yeah. like, anxious enough, like, just getting people, like, if you like the show, you're going to love the fucking books, and then hope that they love the fucking books. But it's right. just, like, bored super nerds like us that would go, let's read it literally. Let's read it by character. Oh, let's read it by, yeah. let's read it backwards. Like,
but from an academic perspective, scientific perspective, right? It would be interesting to see.
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
Find out what the result is.
Yeah, but why? How could you ethically subject someone to that?
You would never get ethics approval for this study.
Well,
I don't care.
No control.
I could right? maybe convince yeah. my husband to do it because he definitely doesn't give any fucks.
Do it.
So I wouldn't like ruin it for him, but
do it.
I'd have to talk him into it.
Do it.
I'll talk to him about it later.
Fantastic.
Yeah, when we were reading Blackwater, the first time that I read the books, I was kind of like just rushing through the books, and I just wanted to know where the story was going. Like when the battle was happening, I just wanted to know where, you know, who was going to win at the end. But yeah. and then even the next time I read it, it's sort of like there's a chapter that's happening in the middle of the battle, and then there's another chapter, and then it goes back to the battle, and then, you know, it kind of jumps between locations. But when you're doing the linear reread, it kind of like, specifically with the Blackwater, it kind of stays just there in King's Landing, right? It does switch between characters, but it stays in the same place, right? And that kind of helped me figure out what everyone's strategy was, how they were, you know, kind of planning to win the battle and everything. And it kind of just worked itself out in my head, which is helpful if you're into that sort of thing. But if you're just a casual reader, then I guess this isn't for you.
Hey, so can I bring up a topic? So just the popularity of the linear reread and how many people it's kind of drawn into the forums and to podcasting with us and stuff like that.
Is that the linear reread, or is it just that we started putting videos on YouTube? If we'd put other stuff on YouTube, would people also have started listening to it?
I'm pretty sure like the reread's the most popular YouTube anyway, but
okay. Yeah,
we do have other stuff.
I think it's different.
Have
I mean,
stuff on there. Like, I think the reread is definitely the biggest like thing, the biggest series we have on there. A lot of the episodes don't actually get put up on YouTube because there's copyright issues.
Oh right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, or there's extra work because they like throw in music or something, right?
Yeah,
somebody has to take all of the copyrighted stuff out and then put something else instead. So, which is a lot of work.
And, like, the full castles, they can only put the discussion at the end on there.
Yeah. I think the theory episodes have, like, a lot of views. Because just
that's
a lot
how
of
I found you guys. That.
Oh, okay.
The which one?
I found you guys... I
the
found you guys through the theories.
Like theories. Random theories.
Yeah,
about
theories
of
ice and fire.
Oh.
That's how I found it, and then I listened to all of the Feast Dance, and then I joined on the forums.
Yay. Yeah. I think the first theories of ice and fire has, like, I don't know, 60, 70,000 views or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
Mind-blowing. But yeah, we have had a lot of people who joined simply because of the linear reread. I think Casey started listening to that and she joined in. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, a lot
as
of
far
people
as I recall, the question was especially, what do we think about like the podcast being so popular now because of the reread, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I answered, for example, so.
That's the most important thing
for example.
Just, like, randomly picking
Patrick?
An example there.
Well, I'm guessing it's the point that we sort of sometimes get into is that it's weird that there is a new guard of people that actually know the podcast from the YouTube.
Yeah, that's true.
I at least found you guys through the Song of Ice and Fire podcast, or Podcast of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, to me it's still weird that there's people who didn't come through the podcast of Ice and Fire. Or like that people are listening to this right now who've maybe never listened to the podcast of Ice and Fire.
Is it annoying, guys? Huh? Like you could cut this out.
Yeah, it's super annoying.
Does it bother
you hate everyone.
You?
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that you hate them, but
I hate Casey. No, I love
think
Casey.
Since then, a lot of the running jokes and stuff and the weird crackpot theories, most of them come from Podcast of Ice and Fire. And somebody who's coming in from YouTube and stuff, they don't really, like, they haven't heard of those before. And they, you know, and usually they don't even know about the hosts that are involved with Podcast of Ice and Fire. Yeah. So it gets kind of like weird.
Yeah, or that, because, like, Mimi pays so we can do this stupid okay thing, you know?
That's
yeah,
true.
Exactly. And Amin's the one who's basically running the forums, right? And most people don't, when they come in, they don't really know him.
Mm.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, that's sad, I guess. But generally, it doesn't bother me that much in general, as long as people are keen to participate. And I really think the format of VOK is the best thing ever, that anyone can just participate, right? So I'm just excited about people joining. But it is a bit sad if they don't really know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Well, like I have listened to, you know, the podcast proper. I just tend to feel more engaged with VOK because
Patrick,
there are so there's more, like, before I actually signed up and was on one, you guys were all like kind of characters, if you will, you know, like on a TV show, so it's a big ensemble kind of thing where,
but I felt more,
you know, maybe I don't tend to agree with one person as much, or I really like somebody else's sense of humor. And there's just a big spectrum of people that can engage me, you know, so it's a little more entertaining that way.
Oh, I guess.
The other thing is, like, it, a lot of what I would go back, and that's been running so long. So I do feel really detached, and like that's more far away, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. I just think that's a very different experience for me, because I started listening to the podcast of Ice and Fire when it was really early on, and they went through different hosts. So for me, it's not just the hosts that are on it at the moment. Like I knew all the other ones when they were like in the periods that they were on the podcast.
Yeah.
Like Apocalypse Dan,
still
and
remember
Ashley 1 and 2. And,
yeah. And what I
and the guy who had a tree fall on.
Oh yeah,
hill,
Ben.
I don't remember.
Ben,
yes.
I started listening
to them from like episode one. Obviously, I didn't start listening when they were on episode one.
No,
but
I started
I went
at episode one because there were few enough that it seemed sensible to do that. But then I also do that in general with other podcasts, even if there's like 5,000 episodes.
Yeah, and I think the first few podcasts were like hilarious because they didn't have like a directed discussion. It was just, I don't know, it was very funny.
I think they were more like us in the beginning.
yeah, exactly.
It's never evolved, did they?
So the next thing we're going to talk about is so now that we have finished Clash of Kings, is it Clash of Kings?
Yeah,
right?
I sometimes get confused.
Now that we finished, Clash of Kings, where do you think there's obviously going to be some drastic changes in the circumstances of certain characters, especially like Tyrion? He was kind of like top of the food chain, and now his father is back, and he's kind of like in pretty dire circumstances right now. And then Sansa's story basically continues from where it was, but Arya's changes quite a lot. Bran's story changes, obviously. You know, a lot of that is happening right now, and then we've just been through the Battle of the Blackwater. And we're going to see the consequences of that in the beginning of Storm of Swords. Anyone have anything to say, you know, about what we've seen in Clash of Kings recently?
Well, like, think about, like, all the new cool characters that we meet. We're going to meet Marjorie. We're going to meet the Queen of Thorns. Who else?
We meet Davos and Stannis.
Well, we've already met
them. First time.
But like,
no,
Storm of Swords,
not in a Game of Thrones.
Well, in Clash of Kings.
Well, no,
Clash of Kings. saw them in the beginning of Clash of Kings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking like beginning of Storm of Swords.
Oh, I see. And Jamie.
Yeah, we can see from his perspective.
We get into Jamie's head, right?
Yeah, he's in the first chapter after the prologue. Right?
Yeah, I think
and
so.
And Cersei. We find out how crazy she really is.
Cersei, does she arrive before Feast, though?
No.
No, she is Feast.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She's like the first chapter after the prologue and Feast, I think. Too.
Yeah,
because it's the end of the Storm where Tyrion fucks everyone over. So.
Yeah.
But it's like the first chapter, and she's going to see Tywin in his murder pot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the dream. So,
in Storm of Swords, we get the Red Wedding. We get the Purple Wedding. Mountain and the Viper.
Good
yeah,
times.
We get a lot of. I mean.
Oh yeah, Oberyn. Oh my God, Oberyn. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That and the Iron Islands. So. Victorian. Yeah.
No.
It's coming. The Kraken is coming.
Victorian is also in Feast for Crows, right?
Yeah, he comes first there, but yeah, from his perspective, yeah. But we hear about him before that.
Right.
So his character is introduced in Storm.
We don't get a Barristan chapter until like Feast Dance, right?
Yeah.
I'd say that. Yeah.
We get Aeron when Theon gets to the island. That's when he first meets him, and Aeron's a dick to him anyway. Right.
Yeah, it's just really brief, though. Well, and we meet Balon real quick before he falls off the bridge, and he's a dick.
We don't get it, but a lot of the POVs from the new characters actually don't come in until Feast. So, Aeron, Victorian, those guys, the crew, they don't.
Well, and we meet Brienne in Clash, but we get to know her a lot more in Storm of Swords.
Yeah, that's true.
Through Jamie.
Yeah, we see so much of her Storm of Swords. I was just thinking that Dany's storyline, like, her,
sucks.
She has just been through the House of... She's... well, yeah. But, you know, the thing is, she just went through the House of the Undying. And it kind of changes her mindset. Like, she hears all these prophecies, and she hears how she's going to be betrayed. And then she sort of starts obsessing with it. Like, all of the time she's thinking, you know, who's going to betray me next? Who's going to betray me next? Whereas before, she's kind of a more trusting character. But then suddenly, because of these prophecies, she does change a lot. And we see that, you know, kind of like throughout the books.
But isn't that the same thing that happened with her father? Like the Barrowtown or whatever, or wherever he got kidnapped, and then he got buried.
Duskendale?
And just Duskendale.
I didn't know.
And then the Defiance of Duskendale. So then he got buried, and he just got more and more paranoid as he's learning about like all these other people like maybe making machinations to take over his power. So. I see her kind of going through that a little bit.
Yeah,
she's like someone who's got like a parent with like Alzheimer's or schizophrenia, and you know you're worried about it like passing
two
on
very different
kid
diseases.
Or like becoming. No, I'm just saying like some kind of mental disorder, right? Or even addiction. If you grow up in a really chaotic home, not like she grew up in his house, but she knows that history and she is always watching for it. And she compares herself a lot of the time, like, am I going to be like my father? Am I going to be like my brother? And she's very wary of that history.
The thing is, she doesn't really understand what her father was like because she didn't know him. She only knows what Viserys has told her, and God knows what he's told her. And I don't think it's until Barristan kind of starts telling her about her family that she realizes what her father was truly like.
Maybe.
And, you know,
I mean,
when he
I
says,
I think that you're right in a sense, but yeah, I think what Hannah's point was that from a superficial perspective, as a reader or someone who knows a family that has these problems, you might also wonder if it's not congenital, but yeah, it would be something that you talk about or you think about, even glancingly, that it could happen to the person that's related to them because maybe it runs in the family. So when we see stuff like this, it kind of also could worry a person that sees a pattern maybe for between the two.
It seems like it really informs a lot of like the way she conducts herself. But Nadia, you're right. Like it does begin to get mashed up with all the prophecies that she hears, and then she starts to get a lot more and more obsessed with that, and is looking for things around corners, you know, a lot more. And it does affect the way that she conducts herself.
Do you think that it has some sort of self-fulfilling prophecy effect where maybe some prophecies will only come true because she's looking for them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like Cersei's.
It's like the Cersei thing.
Yeah.
That's my favorite kind of prophecy, though. The self-fulfilling one.
Self-fulfilling?
Because it's so ironic. So it's the best kind of story element. That the one, but it's overused, but it's still the best story element in my opinion. Because it's so ironic and tragic. Usually tragic as well.
Well, and it gives you a place as the reader to be like. Like watching a horror movie, don't go in there. You know what I mean? Because you obviously can see and have a different perspective than the character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, with her mental state, and okay, so we're theorizing that like she's getting more and more paranoid when she hears these prophecies. With that being said, like I always took it that it was Quaithe as using shadow magic, whatever that she is. But do you think she might just be hallucinating that just to add more paranoia and more prophecy, like to go back, you must go forward, whatever?
Oh, you think she's hallucinating Quaithe?
Well, no, because Jorah can see Quaithe.
No, but like when she's on...
I thought she was the only one
who... in the ship, and when she's in Marine in the pyramid, she sees Quaithe twice. And obviously... like, she meets the actual person, Quaithe, but then I think that she hallucinates when she's not there.
It's a possibility. We talked about this on the last podcast. It's not out yet, but it's definitely a possibility. But,
Was that the Unsullied? Was the last one you covered?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. The acquisition of the army.
Acquisition.
Danny stealing them?
She acquired them through legal means. Check the rules.
That wasn't the deal.
It was. She
gave him the dragon. Print. It's not her fault that homeboy got burned up.
That's true. I'd agree with that.
Oh, come on. There has to be some.
Matt, if I sell you a car and then you
we have happen
to die in a car crash.
Why can I not take the car back with me? You're not using it. The bylaws
try
of
it
the
and see what happens.
Of Massachusetts.
Yeah, I think we should transfer an experiment to verify.
Yeah. Somehow, Targaryen logic and Viking logic are very similar in some ways. It's weird. I like it. That's why I
understand. How do you know?
I think it's more about Dragon Lanzu. I mean, like, that dude could have never owned Drogon.
That's true.
No.
I mean,
well, the problem is he didn't have his lawyer draw up, like, a bill of sale or a title to the dragon. If he had legal ownership of the dragon, then he could have some recourse.
Yeah,
but, you know.
But he didn't really have the time to do that, though. I mean, it went over pretty quickly. I mean...
The other thing is he's kind of stupid. I would have assumed she could speak the language or at least had an inkling of it. Even if you're a foreigner, if you spent any amount of time in a country immersed in their language, you should be able to at least pick up some of it. He just assumes that she can't understand. She never says that she needs the translator.
Because he's the kind of arrogant person who wouldn't pick up languages.
What about his culture? Sorry.
Hmm? Yeah, but to be fair, that doesn't factor in on the the whole deal thing. It's not doesn't affect the legal rights of him as a buyer.
Well, that's
that
true.
He assumes that she's more stupid than she is. I would say that the linchpin of this. Of this deal is essentially that the dragon is not to be owned; it chooses its rider. So, so that when they buy something on the assumption that they can own it, then they are essentially making a deal without knowing the complete story about the product they seek to buy.
It's like magical wand changing in Harry Potter. Like, you know, there's a lot of, like, nuance, like, the wand has to choose the wizard, but then if the wizard's beaten, like, maybe the wand's allegiance will be to the wizard that beat him, you know, it's a whole thing. It's too complicated.
Yeah, they should just have a wizard battle, Daenerys and that slave owner.
That was so
the thing is like, they had a verbal contract, right? So let's assume that a verbal contract is binding. There is no stipulation in the contract that once she gives him the dragon, if any harm befalls him, she can't then reclaim the dragon as her property.
But it isn't her property. That's the thing. She said it in that chapter. She does not own the dragon. She just says to Drogon, burn them. And he does because he likes her, but
that's his decision,
but other than that,
it?
She does not. So, yeah. They're friends, not owner.
You're equals.
Owner object.
If it can be discussed where John's storyline is going.
I'm gonna hang up for a while.
Go pour yourself a drink.
Yeah.
Step away from the mic for a second.
You know what is good about the John chapters, though, is not necessarily him, but it's all the people around him. Like, I really enjoy when he meets Mance, you know? Like, I really do like Mance Rayder's character a lot.
And Tormund?
And Tormund, yeah, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think Mance was boring, but Tormund, yeah, and Corrin Halfhand was also, I mean, it got through the idea that the people who's lived for a long while, that they know that they're living on borrowed time. The older they get, the closer they are to the deaths, essentially. Yeah. So I like that idea that he was just like, well, we need to do this. I'm gonna die anyway soon, so. Why not
also,
now?
Also, I'm really upset that, like, someone who, like, maybe watched the show before reading the books, like, the show really butchered Mance and Corrin Halfhand's characters.
Yeah.
They've done okay with Tormund, like, he still has the same kind of humor and shit like that. But, like, Mance and Corrin are so fucking badass in the books. And then, like, Mance, because he gives zero fucks, he's sitting there, like, singing, playing the lute, like... Whatever, I could kill you or sing to you. I don't care. It's up to me.
Let me just say no show spoilers from the last two seasons, please.
What's that?
No show spoilers from the last two seasons, please.
Mance was introduced.
Yeah, I know. But
agreed.
Like, but not further than this, please.
But I'm just saying, like, the show really butchered their characters, you know.
Yeah. I think for time, they just don't have time to go into all of it. Because then there's the whole thing with, like, you know, Vimer Six Skins and who's the dude that wants to bone Ygritte. They like kinda did him, but not really.
Oh, Longspear? The guy with the big dick?
Yeah. Well, and I kinda like feel bad for that guy in the book too. Like, he's actually kinda sweet in the book. He's just not pretty.
Sure.
Would've turned out better for her or if she didn't listen to him.
Couldn't turn out much worse, could it?
Yeah.
Like, on what a serious note, that, actually, sorry, this isn't just me hating on John.
No, it's
what
true.
What about that kid that hung dead dogs from her, like, spear?
Karma dog's head?
Yeah, her.
Like, yeah, there's a bunch of characters.
They're all crazy.
Yeah.
And we're just like about to see all these characters because John is just joining up with the Wildlings, so we're gonna see all of these characters very soon. We'll be hearing the giant song soon, which is like super sad. Oh yeah.
Oh, Last of the Giants? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the last.
I just read that chapter not too long ago, as a matter of fact.
So
and then there's
like
a great exchange with where John is just like, "What do you mean the last of the giants? Like, there's fucking giants like walking next to us," and she's just like, "You don't know shit."
Yeah. Are you stupid?
Yeah. All right, sorry, Patrick.
Yeah, I'm just sort of thinking, well, right now we're talking about something like, but essentially, has your favorite moment in the books been here already, or are you still waiting for them? I mean, are you just, yes, Purple Wedding, Joffrey dies, is that the thing, or is it more like, has your favorite moment already been here?
I really can't say question. I have much of a favorite moment.
I mean, House of the Undying is fucking epic.
Yeah.
I really liked when Kat died and I didn't have to read her chapters anymore.
I really liked
yeah,
when
that's
Whoa.
A good time, too. Oh, we got books before that, Tanya.
Yeah, no. But we'll get them.
I like Frey Pies, but we're not going to see that until Dance of Dragons.
Yeah.
Ooh, I think my favorite part is that speech by what was her name? Winifred Manderly. Where
oh,
she
yeah.
you know the one where
yeah, that's pretty
was
good.
Is
Wyla.
Wyman yeah. And she gives us the whole speech, you know, where she said, "We swore to be their men, Stark men."
Yeah, I mean
that's
good.
That's fantastic.
I do think that my favorite moment has been here, and that was actually last chapter, which hasn't come out yet. But yeah, the acquisition of the dragons. I was, as I said then, I was sort of already, I knew what was going on to a certain extent. I knew that she would pull a fast one on them, but for somehow, especially when she started talking about she wanted everything, every single soldier they had. Then I knew that she was duping them somehow. So the moment there when I felt that my suspicions, my theories were true, and I was that really like was satisfying for me. And that was
so when the book reaffirmed your own ego, you're happy.
Yeah, sort of like when things have been hinted to and it actually happens and it makes sense that it happens. I started enjoying George's writing even more. Like for later on the foreshadowing of the Red Wedding. I mean, I didn't know that was happening. I knew that stuff was happening, but I didn't foresee that at all. But the hints were there and yeah, this instance with the acquiring of the dragons was the first time I really knew something was happening and I could see, okay, this is going to be either really cool or really fucked up. And it was kind of both, which was really cool.
That's definitely my favorite show moment of the whole show. I think that's the best because you don't realize in the show that she can speak Valyrian at all. And I had seen that part before I read the books, and I was just like, oh, shit, game change. It was really well done. And then when you read the books, it's a little less of a big reveal, but it is a big moment. And she, like, takes charge more. Like,
yeah.
I think everything up until then with her character is just kind of like,
yeah,
or, you know,
goes along, right?
Gotta go with the flow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a really good assertive moment for, but I think my favorite parts in the books is so far was the House of the Undying. It's hard to say though. You got to take it like character by character, I think, to say your favorite moment.
No, I'm pretty sure for me, it's heads and shoulders over everything else for me, that specific moment. But yeah, I guess.
Even when the Red Wedding goes down?
The Red Wedding is not like an enjoyable moment for me.
Yeah, I guess that's different kind of favorite, no, right?
So I'm not sure that it can qualify to be my favorite. I mean, it's a very powerful moment, but would it be my favorite if I don't enjoy reading it? I don't think so. Maybe. Yeah, because if you want powerful moments that like can affect you a lot, then there's going to be a lot in the upcoming books for different reasons. But I'm just saying the one where you feel like either the most satisfied with how it went through, or just, yeah, happy when you look back at it and you always remember that specific moment because it really made a good impression on you and you really liked it. That's for me, that's that one.
Huh. I'd have to think about really. Times like that I really liked something rather than shit went down and it kind of stuck with me, like, you know, a Craster's Keep kind of moment where, you know, the old bear dies, like, you know, those are things that I remember. And like, you know, Red Wedding, obviously, Purple Wedding, you're like, yay. You know, the Mountain and the Viper, come on, like,
yeah, that's amazing.
Silly boy. I'm just, yeah, I remember thinking about that. Oh my God, you won. Stop doing that. And we're going to get to that, and that's going to be horrible.
Yeah, oh that's God. just so frustrating.
Have we gotten a Sam chapter yet?
No, I don't think so. He gets here.
In the linear?
No, we haven't met him. I mean,
but
from a point of view,
soon, though, right?
Yeah, we met him, but we I mean,
we didn't meet him.
Yeah,
you know.
See, I love his chapters, like, are some of my favorite.
So he must get a POV next chapter, right? Because the prologue is Chet and, you know, they're planning their little coup against the Night's Watch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's got to be soon.
Yeah.
Because it's only like 8 chapters in. He's comes in what, like page 237?
Well, it's in 5 episode 46. That's 6. Yeah.
So I guess that is a while.
Yeah, it is.
So can we move on to the next thing?
Yeah.
Do we have a next thing? Sure.
Yeah,
Nadia.
In Nadia's head, show notes.
In my head, yes, there is an extra.
Just look at them.
No, we're just getting to like the fun stuff, which is, you know, we've come up with a lot of crazy theories in this reread. Mm. Can any of you think of your favorite one?
Yeah, the one I just made. This one will be the
great
one.
Great others, actually.
Before
Patrick.
Will be out. Yeah, but no, but the one before the but I enjoy the crackpot theories the most. So for me, it was the one with the Quaithe, because people were talking about if it's hallucinations or what. But no, I think it's John and Danny's daughter, Janny, who's come back from future.
Okay. No, that one is just the one where she's
dead.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, you keep on believing that.
That's your only issue with that theory.
Yeah. Everything else
okay.
is completely sound. He probably froze some sperm.
Really consistent.
I can tell you which one I hate.
Go for it.
Yeah.
The Lyanna plus Rhaegar equals Dany.
Oh.
Yeah.
I will fight that.
No, fight.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
It's okay, yeah. You guys don't get it.
Where is Scott when I need him? Avenge me, Scott.
I reject your reality and substitute it with my own.
Yes.
I've spent so much time arguing against it with Scott. I'm actually very tired of it.
Oh yeah, I remember.
It's because it's too awesome. It just blows your mind. Yeah,
no.
I'm not into it either. But
the biggest thing I like about it is that it's not the obvious thing. I'm so over Sally equals J.
I can get on board with that.
God. You know what? I don't like that. I'm just saying. If that's true, what the F is the point of, the mystery? It's stupid. I don't like it.
But you're really on deep water when you agree with Preston Jacobs. I mean, I'm just saying that's a red signal right there.
That is also a very good theory.
Well, no, because even before I had heard about R plus L equals D, I kept thinking that R plus L equals J was just a little too easy and that there would definitely be more to it, or why drag it out the way that he does. Because
it's a very informing moment for all the characters. I mean, if they knew if John knew that, he would have done everything very differently. So that's the main reason, because all the characters would have acted very differently if they knew John was actually that.
Yeah, I know, but George doesn't write the book for the characters. He's writing it for the reader.
Sure, and I also...
I agree with you, Hannah, but
I also think maybe we don't have a clear sense of how obvious things are anymore, because we've been looking at these books for a really long time and in a lot of detail. And if you read all 7 or 8 or probably 9 of them once they're all published from start to finish without knowing anything and without going as deeply into them, maybe it's just not that obvious.
I think it
isn't that obvious, because there is that point where Kat says something about a Shard Dane, and then Ned says, "Never ask me about John's mother again."
It's not like,
and I just George, yeah, think there's like more to it than R plus L equals J is all I'm saying.
Yeah, but I'm just,
and I kind of hope there is, because I'd like another twist. I like the twists. That's one thing I like about these books.
But to get back to the point where you said that George writes it for the readers, and yes, I agree that he writes it for the readers, but he also maintains his point of only showing what the characters know. So for the simple reason that no one's left that actually knows it, except for the Lord Reed, the Howland Reed. That's kind of one of the reasons. But so he can't, unless he wants to, like, give us that tidbit and then keep on making everyone act a certain way, and us just like say, "Oh my God, why aren't you just? Why don't these people know that? Why don't they act this way?" Because, yeah, I think it's just because it makes more sense to keep it hidden until someone in the books actually learns the truth. So yeah, that's my point.
So do you think we'll meet Howland Reed in either Winds or Dream of Spring?
Can we ever get those books? Please.
I think it's funny how we keep coming back to, when are we going to see Howland Reed? We think about that every episode, and we're no closer to finding the truth.
Yeah.
No. We need him in our lives.
Gotta wait for the next book.
Yeah. So anyone
prologue maybe
to think of?
I just think that maybe the most emblematic theory that was ever mentioned or first thought of in the reread is probably the Moon Dragons, if that's actually a theory.
I was waiting for
but I mean, we're mentioning
that.
It. Yeah, we're mentioning it all the time.
Like, to me,
is that from this
okay,
series?
So. Yeah, it is.
The snippet it was when you listen to it, like, it makes complete sense.
I
wasn't from
I
Peace,
really
the
don't.
Peace Dance reread.
Yeah.
Sorry?
No, it's from the linear, but I really don't
yeah,
like
it's like,
personally.
It's like
really
the second
episode,
or third episode. It's really early.
It's like third or something weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's
yeah,
it's.
That was so much fun to be on while he was describing it, and he's like, "Wait, let me finish describing." Because it's like the dragons came from the moon, and everyone's like, "Oh." He's like, "Wait."
Yeah, I still don't like it, even though I heard it. I don't. That's one,
I'm not
one
sure
of the
I like the theory. It's just the way he was. I mean, the way White Raven was going on about it was just. He actually thought it through, you know.
Yeah, that means like it's not the most ridiculous theory I've heard. So.
Yeah.
Which isn't.
No, definitely that I can agree upon. It's not the most ridiculous one, but I just still don't like it as a theory.
Fair. But this is very much be okay to me.
Yeah. I'm not sure I would even call it a theory. It's just a be okay.
Headcanon.
Almost. Yeah.
Okay, so next thing is favorite episode that you were on, or just, you know, maybe you weren't on it and you enjoyed it.
Can I go first?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
My favorite episode had to be the Iron Bidet. My face fucking my face hurt from laughing so hard, and it was just great. I could listen to that after show, like if I'm feeling shitty, like Trump won the election, I'll listen to the Iron Bidet after show. Like, oh,
that's
my
like
god, it's just so good.
Be okay after show. Anyone
I
else?
Like probably the favorite. My favorite one that I was on was Medieval Vagina.
Those two are definitely
my
favorite. Oh
yeah, that's definitely mine too.
It's like for me, it's between those two. Those were the most fun.
Enlightening.
Yeah. Go, Matt.
I was gonna say apparently I missed a lot, like from the couple minutes I was on that episode.
Yeah.
I missed a ton.
One thing I love, like when I'm on them or just listening to them, is how you randomly pop in on different episodes.
While you're running.
And it's usually,
yes, that's amazing.
It's usually, what the fuck did I just walk into? It's just like, so
what,
you have amazing timing.
Was it you, Hannah, or Michal in the Christmas episode who said, oh, a random Matt appears, and I thought that was just such a VOK thing to say, like, yeah.
I can't remember, it's probably Michal.
Well, sometimes, like, they're scheduled for, like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I can't, like, you know, people work, Jesus, guys. So I pop
no,
in when
there
I...
was also an episode where you were at work, and Bina was like, okay, and Matt seems to be just saying things that will work in real life and on the podcast, and you come back and you're like, that's correct, and I just kept wanting you to, like, be doing that the whole time.
Hey, it takes talent.
It was just awesome. But the Iron Bidet is, like... so awesome, so funny.
But I also think the Medieval Vagina was absolutely unique. So.
It was.
I also.
Yeah.
Anything else like it?
Yeah, the Medieval Vagina was probably the best. Of those I've been on, I don't know. The first was really special, because it was the first one, but. I really laughed. I laughed a lot, like the last one we did, with the one that's not out yet. But I think it's because I'm starting to be more and more comfortable with you guys. So I'm getting the jokes more easily, and I'm yeah. So it's really fun.
Well, there was some good jokes from everyone on that last one.
We just randomly
everyone
plugged
really?
In that
or...
one. Yeah, I mean, not just me for once.
For a change.
Oh my god, were any of you guys there? Was anybody on the episode where somebody brought up like this weird documentary about like competitive tickling?
Yeah, that was probably me.
Oh my god, that was so funny. That was like one of my first ones, and it was one of my favorite like things that ever happened to me ever.
Yeah,
I was
so
dying.
Another
like,
episode
I,
that
I
like
a little bit.
Another episode that like me being Greg, a bunch of us listened to is Dollop, which is a comedian thing where they just go through like weird American history, and they had episode on competitive tickling. I think it's like episode like 3 or 4 of their like entire canon. Listen to it, everyone. It's hilarious and very
Can you
very
put a
strange.
Link?
I will eventually.
What do you think though is the best episode as far as like serious analysis of the books?
Ooh, that's a difficult one.
Because I liked the one we did on the Blackwater.
Yeah, I think we did a lot of what ifs in that chapter, which was very interesting.
Yeah.
I think Patrick and I just spent a lot of time discussing why Stannis didn't do certain things, like didn't ally with certain people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
yeah there was also troop movements.
Yeah.
And House yep. of the Undying was very
House
good.
House of the Undying, yeah, exactly. We got very in-depth in that chapter.
I also like, we had one where we talked really in-depth about Theon. I think it might have been when he takes Winterfell. And we talked about like his psyche more.
Yeah.
Was I on that one? That sounds familiar.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, and just by the way, my talking points are all done, so unless you guys have something you really need to discuss.
I think I have one more.
Yeah.
So, with a linear reread, I feel like a lot of VOKs that I'm on, I'm talking to mostly guys. And like, maybe Bina, or maybe Amber's like lurking. But I feel like the linear reread episodes have a lot more like diversity as far as male to females. And including today, like where I think we're 3 and 3 or 3 and 4.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
That's good.
How does that make you feel?
Oh, fine. No, but I thought there was like...
Vali hates women.
I think there was like...
Yes, masculinity is threatened.
I
think there was some discussion that like when we were doing like Dragon Cast, like it was all guys. And like a couple other things where it's just like all guys. It's like where do, you know, you can't find one girl to join you podcasting. And the linear reread has been a lot better diversified like that.
Yeah.
When do you guys normally do Dragon Cast? Do you do it the night of?
No, we usually do it like the. I think at one point we were doing it the Monday after. And I think last season we're doing it the Wednesday after the episode.
Yeah, I think the linear reread we do mostly on weekends, so it's just possible for more people to join in.
Yeah.
Whereas ones you usually have like weekday nights or something, which is not that easy.
People should arrange their schedules around my schedule. Is that too much to ask?
Yes. Yes, it is.
No.
That is definitely too much to ask.
Well, fine. Now I know where we stand.
You should have known this before. I mean, even the matriarch of the podcast is from Britain. I mean, everything should have revolved around Bina to begin with, right?
That is entirely true.
Can you tell me who do you think does the best chapter summaries?
Oh, that's mean. That's difficult.
Orgasm is pretty good.
Orgasm.
Orgasm.
Yeah, orgasm.
Yep. Okay, that's the correct answer.
Small Paul does good ones too.
Yeah,
Paul does them good.
I agree.
I bumble and meander my way through a chapter. I don't do good ones.
Yeah, I always liked though that whenever Bina was the host, the main host, she always gifted you with a laughter, even though you weren't funny. Like that was great.
Very
cool. That was so sweet.
What makes a good chapter summary?
It has to be funny and
laughter from it.
Yeah. I think Paul's really good because he's a very good writer, but he's also got a great sense of humor.
Yeah, I also think that really good at sometimes like mixing everything together. The only time I personally feel like the chapter summaries or a summary in general works for me with the humor is when, like with the Wolfcast, for me was like really the way when you have a beef with the chapter, essentially, that's when I feel like you can feel the reader has a beef with the chapter or the episode. That's when you know that it's funny. For me, I can't really, as I'm really neutral on a lot of these chapters. So unless we get to Euron Greyjoy soon, I won't have that flame burning within me. But I did that for the Wolfcast with the show, because that really pissed me off sometimes. So that's when I made my best ones, if I have to say myself. But now I can't, because it's not like nothing's really that. Also because I've read it so many times. It's not like my first time. So everything's like, yes, I know this is happening. It doesn't affect me the same way as it did the first two times I read this.
Yeah, but I feel like what you said, like having a beef with a chapter, like the more times you read it, the more like little stupid things will fucking nitpick your brain, and you just have to, and those are the things that kind of bring out laughs, because it's like something that kind of bothered you the first time, or like that wasn't written well or wasn't presented like in a way that made sense to you, and then like you read it again and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse.
It's when you present something and the ones who are listening, us as listeners, we can recognize the annoyance, but maybe not to the certain to that extent as that you the one who makes this summary, it burns with hatred towards this thing. I mean, there is like things where you really like, oh my god. I mean, I'm not referencing Tanya at any point in this specifically, but
I was about to.
Hatred towards something specifically so fervently that everyone else, yeah, maybe they can see, yeah, this kind of stupid, but that you feel so much for it, that's what makes it enjoyable.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. You can find us on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and our WordPress page, bokpodcast.wordpress.com. And you can always find us at Podcast of Ice and Fire forums. Bye everyone.
From the desert down in Kothway, wind in my silver hair, smell the shade of the evening rising up through the air. Up ahead in the distance, I see the palace of dust. See how it drinks in the morning sun, but now enter I must. So I stood in the doorway, listen to Pyatt pretend I remember thinking to myself, this could mean wisdom or this could mean hell. You must only take the right door and go up the stairways. There were noises in the corridor, I thought I heard him say, welcome to the house of the undying. Such a mazy place, such a crazy place. Plenty of rooms in the house of the undying. And when your mind is clear, there are visions here.
Hannah was about to say when the first linear reread was published.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not published, but posted or whatever.
It was published on the WordPress page August 31st, 2015.
Yeah.
Oh, what I say.
You were right. You were right on the money.
So I'm not, yeah.
And
so,
with that, bid
so adieu. Yeah, two Christmases.
It was also two Christmases, yes.
Yeah, you were right too, Patrick.
I'm usually not completely wrong. Whenever I am wrong, there's usually a grain of truth to it, though. So I expected as much. Does it feel like some of the theories got confirmed by the way we read it? Like some of the because of the different way of reading it, did you stumble upon a theory or feel like some theory was more obvious from except for stupid theories?
Tyrion's not a dwarf.
He's Benjen.
Have you ever seen them in the same room?
Who's also Dario.
Right.
Yeah.
Those are good theories, but I think there's some realistic ones that are a little more clear because of the linear reread, which is like the Varys Illyrio involvement, like a master plot with them. There's been a lot of discussion on it, and I think some of that is revealed a little more in the retelling when you put Dany's stuff closer together with what's happening in real time when King's Landing. There's a couple of those that are like more realistic, though, you know.
Yeah, but also there's like it does somehow also feel like, even though it's more realistic, it does somehow also feel a little more like they're teleporting. Because sometimes the time period seems like they, I mean, like Illyria must have really made a jump or something. I don't know. I feel like some of the things
are... He jumped
are...
into the ocean and swam like a Merling he is.
Theory confirmed.
How long does it take to get across the Narrow Sea?
Well, it doesn't take
like
that
it
long.
If you are, if it's a little the finger, bears, like...
How long does Quentin take?
Quentin takes the long way around, right?
Like five books.
Meanwhile, Sam just got off a boat.
He starts on the west side. And then he goes all the way around, and then he goes to Braavos, right?
I guess the answer is it takes as long as it's convenient for the narrative. So,
does he go to Braavos, or does he go all the way around and up into Slaver's Bay?
Who?
Quentin.
I can't remember.
I don't think he goes to Braavos. He goes from Dorne, and then he goes around the southern part of Essos. Like, don't... Or am I thinking of Victarion? Shit, it's all getting confused.
No, he goes to Volantis, right? Because Volantis is...
Yeah, that's
slavery.
Right.
And then
Victarion goes from the Iron Islands all the way to Slaver's Bay.
Oh, that reminds me, if any of you would like, there is a website called Sporkle, and it's all like user... created trivia quizzes, and they have a bunch of really great A Song of Ice and Fire and Game of Thrones ones, and one of them is, can you identify the character based on their travel log?
Oh.
And it gives you a map of like where they start, where they go, and then where they end.
Oh,
and it's really fun.
Please edit this out.
How's it going, Matt?
It's going great. It's 72 in Boston today. Global warming.
What's 72? What's that in
We have snow.
Inches?
Yeah, it's like 50 over here. In the desert.
Huh.
So.
Seriously, we got like 20...
Well, it's raining in London,
We got like 20 centimeters of snow. I mean, I don't know what that's inches, but something like 16 inches snow. Is that right? No, it can't be right, can it? No, 8 inches.
Yeah, 8 inches. All right. I kept saying 8 inches, 8 inches, 8 inches, and then I realized I was muted.
Yeah, I've done that before. I did a programming competition with some friends the other day, and I kept like saying something really important, and they kept ignoring me, and I got really mad, and I was muted the entire time. But that's, I should know that from VOK. I really
the
should
worst,
know better, but I didn't. So.
The worst muting thing that has happened to me was when I was on Podcast of Ice and Fire, and I think Amin said something like, "Oh, what was that? What was that cousin's name? Jamie and Cersei's cousin who was there at that time." And I'm like literally screaming into my laptop. It was Damon Lannister.
Oh no! I ignored you. No,
I wasn't even muted. There was something wrong with my connection, and they couldn't hear me. And I just like kept screaming.
That's the most frustrating thing. I also like by default get angry first and assume people are ignoring me before I check whether my mic is muted, because that's what I do.
I would never assume that, because people
no,
don't.
I was like,
work.
No, I know this. It's Kevin Lannister. Why are you guys not listening to me? They couldn't hear me at all.
Maybe you're in the wrong time zone. Nadia.
No, I think it was just some lag or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you mean the sound?
I was like reading a Tyrion chapter, and it was like the cook, but I misread it and said the cock.
The cock.
Oh yeah. That's I remember that.
But
that
then, like, right then, my call dropped. And I didn't know because I was reading my thing, and Sabina's, like, screaming at me, the cook.
Oh, yeah.
Please edit this out.
I was her favorite. That's what I thought from it.
Sure.
So
that's what you get from everyone who's joining because of the reread. I mean, you basically assume the same thing when I joined.
Because
and I'm saying
assume it
because I never said it.
Because I'm pretty sure I heard you say it. Didn't?
Patrick, I think you pronounced the words for me.
Okay, I'll check the recording, but I'm pretty sure it happened.
Well, you didn't object to it. Maybe you weren't on the podcast episode where he said it, but you didn't object to it. So.
You know, we can just put Mary on the spot and ask her who her favorite is.
Mary, who's your favorite?
Right now. Well, Vina, of course.
Well, that's the obvious one. But other
who's
than
your favorite male that's on this call?
I'm not answering that question.
That is an answer in itself.
Okay. Well,
okay.
I don't need any more validation.
We should really play this compliment song on. On all episodes that you're on.
I really like Glenn a lot.
Okay, we're doing that.
And it's like the ladies' night out section of this podcast.
Yeah, everybody likes Glenn. He's so nice.
He's awesome. Are you crazy?
He's nice, yeah. He's nice. He's a nice person.
The first podcast I ever did was with Glenn. So, yeah.
Please edit this out.
Guys, do you think we will go there?
No.
If I'm like the proper podcast of Eisenberg?
I think because they took a very a decided step that they were going to have these fixed hosts.
Yeah. And I think ours because it's so decentralized makes a huge difference.
Our basic like framework is that, you know, anyone can join in, anyone can host, and anyone can like submit an episode.
I think that makes it less professional, which I think is perfectly fine.
Yeah, it is.
It's a trade-off, right? And I prefer what we're doing, but there's pros and cons to both. But also, just in terms of like what you said about different characters, Hannah, I felt like when I started listening to Be Okay, I was a bit overwhelmed because I felt like there were a bit too many people for me to actually... Like, with the podcast of Ice and Fire, I felt like I could always keep track of who everyone was because there were never that many people. And the hosts were always regular, at least for some amount of time. Whereas in VOK, you listen to two episodes and they might not have any people in common on them. So I found it much harder to get to know people here. And it took me actually podcasting with people before I kind of felt like I knew people a bit. Like before, when I was just listening, I didn't feel like I had that much of a relationship with anyone as I did with Podcast of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, I guess I agree completely with that, actually. I started also by listening to, I mean, some rereads and full cast recordings, and that was it, essentially. And then the reviews of Game of Thrones came up, and I sort of just kept to Wolfcast because it was like, you know, it's people from the same place on Earth as me, so they might have some more similarities, like opinion wise, than others. And it's it kind of evolved from when I then got on the Wolfcast. I started like talking to one person more, and like usually Brett. Yeah, Brett was. Or Greg was the two people I talked to other like that sort of made all the Americans and the Australians okay to talk to. To begin with, it was kind of weird to have like this giant cast of people, and it was really and wasn't so much there for the people, more for the content to begin with, and then the people kind of grew on me.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, now I'm definitely in it for the people.
Yeah, I think in the beginning it was definitely, like, really weird for me because it was interacting with people who, you know, come from such a different, like, background from me. I think the only person I felt comfortable talking to was Vikram because we kind of, like, come from very similar, you know, similar background and stuff. And it was easy to talk to him. And then slowly, you know, you kind of get into it and then...
I also really struggled with like telling people's voices apart, and it's difficult to respond. Like with this call, if someone says something, I will know who said it because I can like tell all your voices apart, obviously.
Yeah.
But if you're fairly new to the podcast and there's a lot of people and two people have maybe like similarish voices and similarish accents, it's just not as nice when you just really don't know who said something just now and then you want to respond to it but you can't say Hannah, this thing
you
just said.
So. Yeah, it's still hard for me too.
For the longest time, I could not tell Matt and Shane apart, even though they have like drastically different accents.
I can kind of see that.
Wait,
I can kinda
what?
See that.
You and Shane, you just sounded the same to me.
He has a complete Texas accent.
I know that.
I also like the time that somebody
can sound alike.
Yeah, I also like the time somebody confused me with Zach. It was like, dude, I clearly aren't American. I'm that's pretty obvious from my accent.
Kind of obvious, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but you know what? Like Zach's voice has changed from like when he first started to be okay. I think he like went through puberty and now it's deep.
my voice?
At first, so
no,
like
Zach.
if Paul and Zach are on the same call, sometimes I'll get them like mixed up.
Yeah, they sound a bit similar.
Yeah.
They sound really similar.
Yeah. The people I haven't been podcasting with, I cannot always tell apart, definitely.
Yeah, and because there's
it's still difficult.
Yeah, because there's so many of us, I found it really impersonal at first. I mean, now I really don't, but I've been around for a while.
Well, it's funny because I really agree. There's a lot of people and it's hard to know everyone, but I'm definitely in for the people. I mean, I wanted to join, but because I was listening to you all and being, oh, they seem like such a fun and welcoming group of people, and I just want to join them. And
I wanted to join.
So obviously,
I wanted to talk about stuff. Didn't care much. Well,
obviously, I'm into Song Always on Fire, yeah. And it's really nice to have people to talk to with that, about it, because in real life, people usually regret asking me questions about it.
that's the weird part of this, right? That we go from being fans of something to being not idols, but so in a way, celebs.
Yeah.
Well, people do make idols of me, but that's a different
thing. Like,
now there's back to Patrick idolizing
apart from that, the pure knowledge that people listen to our podcast and think that we are cool or something like that.
I don't know if anyone thinks that. I don't know if cool is the word.
Well,
anyone
Marie just said it, so it has to be true.
Yeah,
fair enough.
But then now I joined, so
now you can't.
So there goes the neighborhood.
Do you still think we're cool? No, you don't have to answer that. Never mind.
Yeah, I do still think we are cool.
Do you think Patrick is an idol, though?
No.
Well, the part with I'm gonna ignore that part, but the part where you say that we're cool, I've been waiting for that my whole life since I started primary school.
Patrick would like
anybody
to make a hostage.
Anybody to tell me I'm cool. That wasn't really the modus operandi of my school life, I have to say.
Oh, dear.
Please edit this out. I do have a question about the linear reread for Mary and Jacques, though.
Yeah?
Well, I guess all of you. Which episode of the linear reread was your first one that you were on?
The
first time.
And the one with you, both of us.
Yeah, we actually we were in the same first reread episode, and it was the one that lasted 7 hours.
Oh, really?
Mm. I mean, I did the same one, the 7 hours, because when I left, it was like already.
You were there for like five, though.
Yeah, I mean, so.
You were there for a while.
Yeah.
Was that the one where I was there too when we talked about?
You
religion?
Were there too, Nadia.
Yeah, you were there too, Nadia. We talked about religion.
There was talk about religion. Yeah.
And
was actually deep, like.
I remember that.
It was a good day.
Like, first time to talking to you all, and I'm discussing religion beliefs with Hannah. I was like, okay, that happened.
That was actually the first call that I was ever on with Patrick, and it was like my second time with you, Nadia.
Yeah, it was a lot of people's first time that time.
Yeah,
and I was glad to be there for you guys.
Oh, another thing I've lost track
because
of
the first call with Patrick is obviously a big thing in any VOK person's life.
No, don't encourage him, please.